This is Where Did the Road Go? Our aim is to explore the fringe, to be true skeptics and question openly, to investigate the paranormal, bring light to the dark corners of history, and give a voice to the shunned of science. We deal in mystery and the important questions that these subjects bring to light. What is reality? Who are we? And why are we here? Join us on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com for a full show archive, links to all our social media, upcoming schedule, and much, much more. Now, join your host Soraya on this week's edition of Where Did the Road Go?
And welcome to this, which is technically the first show of the third year of Where Did the Road Go? And before we get to our guest tonight, I have one thing I want people's opinions on. And that is, there's a movie out there called I, Origins. It's an independent film, and it's the letter I and Origins. And I watched that this week, and I was very impressed with the sort of middle-of-the-road attitude that the movie took. And sorry, I had to adjust my levels there a little bit. It took a very middle-of-the-road kind of outlook on science and spirituality. And I was really impressed with the way they did it. It was really interesting. It didn't in any way besmirch science, but kind of, as far as I was concerned, led to the idea that science can perhaps at some point connect into spirituality and verify some level of spirituality in the future. You can take it however you want. If you've seen the movie, though, I would like your opinion on it. Because in looking through Netflix reviews, a lot of people, especially from the atheist side of things, hated it. And they hated it thinking it was someone actually called it an anti-science Christian propaganda, which it was not in the slightest. There was nothing Christian about it. And I'd like to hear people's opinions of it. I'd like to see what you guys thought. You know, post a message on Facebook, shoot me a message on Facebook, email me if you've seen the movie, or go out and check out the movie if you're interested, and let me know what you think. Do you think it was a fair take on these subjects, or do you think that it was biased in one way or another? Because I thought it did a very good middle-of-the-road sort of job with it. Again, it was called I, Origins, letter I and Origins, done by the same people who did Another Earth, which was also an excellent movie, but not something discussable here, really, I guess. All right, so we were going to have Peter Robbins on tonight, but Peter had some personal issues. So Peter will be on in 2 weeks, and my guest from 2 weeks is going to be on tonight. And Summer, are you there?
I am here.
And we have Summer Akasha Snape, and you are essentially a cryptozoologist.
Yes, yeah. I'm a cryptozoologist and tracker.
Now, by tracker, you mean what?
The best way to describe it is, like, you know what a hunter would do? You literally follow tracks, like, as in footprints.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a science. you just basically, you know, with the weather and different things, you can essentially track where someone has gone, person, or really anything that leaves a footprint.
And how long have you been doing this?
I've been doing it professionally for about 2 years. I'd always been interested in it as a young teenager. I moved from California to Idaho and learned, how to hunt. And, you know, just being out there with my grandfather, it really interested me on how he would literally he'd be walking and, you know, I'd be looking around in the woods for, you know, something to jump out at me. And he would just be looking at the ground and he'd always find what he was seeking out. And it was just so interesting to me. So, yeah. Hmm.
Okay, and you work with search and rescue as well, right?
I do. I've just recently started the Explorer program for Washington State Search and Rescue. Most of that interest came from my interest in missing people in national parks.
Wow, so David Politis' work.
Yes, exactly. He's got some amazing, amazing work that he's been doing, and you know, you can't help but want to be a part of it. And so that was my way of being a part of his story.
All right. And you work with Crypto Four Corners as well?
Yeah, I do. I've been with T4C you know, namely J.C. Johnson kind of grandfathered me in, you know, kind of took me under his wing, which was really a great opportunity for me. I went down to New Mexico and learned how to track with some Navajo elders. It was really an amazing experience.
Oh, I bet. All right. So we're going to be talking tonight about some of the more odd encounters people have. And you are working on a book that will be out eventually on these subjects, on kind of obscure cryptids, right?
Yeah, correct. Yep. The more obscure cryptids, most cryptozoologists are, you know, well-versed on some of these cryptids, but most people actually have never heard of a lot of them, but they're quite interesting.
It seems like you're touching a little bit in David Weatherly-like territory at times.
Oh my gosh, so much. He's definitely someone that I admire his work a lot. Yes, David Weatherly is a great example.
All right. Well, let's get into the Grinning Man. And tell us about that.
Well, you know, the Grinning Man, there's really very few accounts of the Grinning Man. And anyone who knows about Mothman or has read Mothman prophecies knows a man named John Keel. He's an author, and he wrote a book called Strange Creatures from Time and Space. It came out in 1970, I believe. These accounts of the Grinning Man came from the 1960s, started in the 1960s. It didn't last very long, actually. The Grinning Man is essentially, you know, most people, when they see a Grinning Man, it directly is involved with, like, a UFO sighting.
Right.
Within very close proximity at literally the same time. And like I said, there's very few accounts of it, but they're so strange that you just can't help but take note of it. Like, wait, what? You know, it really interests you because it's so weird. But in this book, he speaks of a man that the first encounter was two young boys who were walking down a street in New Jersey in October of 1966. And basically, these boys were, they saw a strange tall man standing in the brush beneath a turnpike in New Jersey. And one boy said to the other, "Hey, who's that standing behind you?" And the other kid turns around, and there's a man standing in the bushes on the other side of a fence, just, you know, not far from them, maybe 10, 15 feet from them. And he said it was strange. The one boy said it was really strange because when he said that, like, the man pivoted, you know, it didn't seem like he was touching the ground. It was really an odd experience. You know, you don't see someone pivot, like, who does that, you know?
Right, right, kind of like floating.
Yeah. And so that's what made the boy that, you know, didn't notice the guy, it, like, scare them. So they're like, what the heck? Anyway, they said the man just kind of pivoted around and grinned at him, but he had an eerie, over-exaggerated grin on his face, like an ear-to-ear grin. Something like I would think, you know, like a Joker would have. And they noticed that he had no features. His eyes were very far apart, small and beady, and he had a dark complexion. He didn't really have ears, a nose. Didn't notice his hands. He had no hair. And he stood over 6 foot tall, is what they said. And basically, it scared the crap out of him. And so they took off. And later, they said he was wearing a shiny green metallic, like a jumpsuit, like something maybe a construction worker or somebody who worked in cement, almost like a firefighter, you know, with suspenders. Pants, and it had a large black waist belt. And, you know, they ran before they could, you know, speak to the man or what have you. And so that was the end of that encounter, which I find very strange. I mean, you know, kids have wild imaginations, but for them to make something like that up, and they were really terrified. And then 3 weeks later, a man, just in the next, county over, or town, I'm sorry, state over, his name is Woodrow Wilson Derbinger. He's a 50-year-old sewing. He's a 50-year-old sewing machine salesman. He was driving home from Marietta, Ohio, to Mineral Wells, West Virginia. It was the night of November 2nd, 1966. Basically, he was driving his car down a an old highway, and came to a stop sign. Came close to the stop sign. There was a car following close behind him, and behind that car, he noticed what looked like a hovering object. And he just kind of, you know, was like, okay, it must be the headlights. You know, it's dark out. It was after 7 p.m. It was dark. And so he gets closer to the stop sign, and the other car swerves and passes around him and blows the stop sign. He's like, what the heck? So he slows down the stop sign and starts to speed up again, and this hovering object basically comes and cuts him off in the middle of the four-way stop, and kind of, you know, this thing comes around his right side of the vehicle. And you can see it. It's a silver, almost grayish, it's reflecting the street light. But it's like a, you know, like a washed out gray color.
Right.
It's a shaped like a lantern. On each end is tapered on the top and bottom. And it's emitting this really, really bright light. So he kind of can't look directly at it, kind of like the sun. And so he slams his brakes and opens, then a door opens on this object, and out steps a very tall man, in different clothing than what these boys said, but they have a very, they seem to be connected, because they both, these kids said before that this man reminded them of, they would just, if they had to call him anything, they would call him a grinning man. It was really an odd grin on his face. And this man said the same exact thing, but this guy was wearing, kind of like what you would think, you know, an MIB would be wearing, you know, a Men in Black would wear.
Right.
Pink top hat, you know, just very clean looking. Very, very tall. Over 6 feet, same thing. A painted grin on his face. He kind of came up to his right side window and said telepathically to the guy, roll your window down. So this guy's terrified, so he rolls the window down, just enough so that if the guy spoke, he could hear it clearly through the window. And so he has a telepathic conversation with this man. The man says to him, he says, what are you called? And the man thinks to himself, what am I called? And he assumes that he means, what's your name? So he tells him, he says, my name is Woodrow. And telepathically, though, I guess. This was never spoken word.
Right.
And so the man proceeds to say to him, why are you frightened? And he doesn't, you know, he's kind of stopped dead in his tracks at this point. And so then the man receives, you know, he's completely terrified at this point. And he says, we don't be frightened. We mean you no harm. We wish you nothing but happiness. And, you know, just the man is just completely terrified. And the guy gets the grinning man. Gets back walks back to the vehicle, the unidentified flying object, and gets back in and proceeds to fly off. And he doesn't, kind of loses time a little bit in that moment. Doesn't quite remember the actual vehicle flying off. He just remembers kind of snapping out of it. Oh, actually, I'm sorry. The last thing the guy said to him after saying, we wish you only happiness, he says, they call me Cold.
Right, right. Injured Cold, right.
Yeah, and so they did associate that with injured cold. That's kind of hard to pinpoint where that exactly, why that got, you know, mixed in with that. I'm not really 100% sure. I don't know if you've done research on injured cold. It's kind of an unknown, that part of it, as far as I know.
Yeah, well, I've always been fascinated with Keel's work, and actually that book you're talking about was re-released as The Complete Guide to Mysterious Beings.
Oh, good to know. I'll have to look that one up.
So, because it's a lot cheaper than trying to find the original.
Yeah, because it was really hard for me to find the original.
Yes.
It took me a couple of years, actually, to find that dang thing.
And I believe the Anomalist books also just re-released The Eighth Tower in some form as well.
Oh, cool. I'm going to have to look into that. Thank you.
So, as well as a couple of Jacques Vallée's works.
Oh. I like it. Yeah. You know, I love some of these authors that you're naming. They're just so interesting to me. I love reading their works. And that really has made me decide to write a book because there's nothing more interesting than these, like I said, more obscure cryptids. They're so fascinating to read about. And there's so few accounts of them, but they're so detailed and so rare that you just can't help but want more.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And they definitely fall into that high strangeness category where they don't seem like they're necessarily what they, the obvious answer. Like, if you see a Bigfoot, you can argue, well, maybe it's a material creature, maybe it's not. But with these things, it's hard to say that they're just physical creatures because they seem to be playing on some other level of existence almost.
Oh, 100%. Definitely. You know, especially when something speaks telepathically with you.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I've never had a full conversation telepathically with someone. I mean, we've all had those moments when we're like, oh my gosh, you just finished my sentence. Or how'd you know that? You know what I mean? But come on. A full-on conversation, that's a whole other story.
Yeah, especially when the whole conversation's telepathic.
Exactly. And it's just like, if you've never, been into telepathy and all of a sudden you've just honed it, like, that's not a normal occurrence.
I think also people will dismiss it because it sounds so crazy. But when you do the research, you find that this is a common element in so many of these encounters that something's going on. People aren't just making this up because there's too many similarities between the encounters, even if the encountered creature is completely different.
Correct. Oh, totally, totally. You know, actually, my mother had an encounter with what I have come to what I come to realize, because she'd say, if I was someone who worked for, MUFON or something, who actually took these reports, I would literally throw her in the category of a grinning man or a tall man or a shadow person, kind of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're all similar, very similar.
And I
throw her encounter in there too, but she swears that, it was more of a hat man. I don't know if you've heard of a hat man.
Yeah.
I can't. But, to me, they're probably the same thing, I'd like to think.
Well, what was your mom's encounter?
Well, actually, like I said earlier, we moved to Idaho when I was 13. And we lived up a creek. We lived up the creek, a pine creek, for real here. We lived in Pinehurst, Idaho. Very, very small town, population, I don't know, 350 maybe.
Mm.
And up the creek, they were driving down the creek to this semi-main road that ran into town. They were going to the grocery store, her and my stepfather. And they were driving, and when you came out to the main road, you can go right or left. You cannot go forward any longer. So they were going to make a left into town. And my mother was driving, and when she took left, and this was broad daylight, when she took left, as she was, she looks left, she looks right, and then she looks left again. Well, as she was turning left, she noticed something out of her peripheral, turned to the right, and on the corner, in the huge brush, I mean, it's a wooded area. Heavily wooded. But right there on the side of the road, there seemed to be a very unnaturally tall man standing there with a top hat, a black suit, what looked to her to be elongated arms or hands. No, she couldn't see a figure as far as facial features or anything like that went. She just kind of saw a hat, a dark face, and then a suit. And she kind of shook it off a little bit, like, what? And so then she was staring. And so my stepfather looked in that direction and just said, go, drive. And my mom just stepped on it. Because because at first she thought she was seeing stuff,
Sure.
If you lived in the woods long enough, like, you sometimes do, your eyes will play tricks on you, and you'd be like, okay, I'm just seeing stuff. But when he saw it, she knew that she wasn't seeing anything. And so they stepped on it, and she never looked back. I mean, they spent extra time at the grocery store and then stopped at his mother, my grandmother's house on the way home. I'm not kidding you. They were terrified to come home. It's kind of funny when you think about it. My mom is a brave woman. I love her, and she's had experiences with things that I can't say once or twice in her life. but that I've actually been there with her and experienced one of the accounts that I've experienced. They weren't really bringing me in, but it was something otherworldly, you know. So I know, I can't say that my mom's one of those attention seekers. She's so not. She's so far from that. And I don't know. I believe her. And you know, I don't, for her to see that, and then for the other person in the vehicle, whom I believe, he won't talk about it. He won't. He says, I don't know what you're talking about.
Huh.
He's too afraid to talk about it. You know what I mean? And so, I don't know. I really believe her. Not just because she's my mom, but she's an honest woman.
Well,
that's what I mean to say,
the sense of almost irrational fear that come along with some of these things is also very interesting. You get it with the black-eyed children as well. All the reports talk about this almost irrational fear that people feel when they encounter these things.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely irrational. I mean, you know, I can't think of maybe one moment in my life where I was so afraid that I would do anything to not be afraid anymore. It really is. It's a terrifying moment.
And I don't know if you have one. Was that a paranormal encounter or something else?
Well, you know, it was more paranormal. I'll make this short. I was with my family, with my mother, with my stepfather, his mother, his father, and my brothers, my sister, and my boyfriend at the time. I was in high school. We all decided to go out to this cemetery called Lane Cemetery. It's very hard to find. No one knows about it. It's on private property. It's very small. There's probably, honestly, two handfuls of people on Earth that even know it exists. It's out in Caldwell, Idaho, out by a lake called Rose Lake. Beautiful, beautiful place. We would frequent a catfishing hole out there when I was in high school. And my parents decided, it was broad daylight. My parents said, hey, let's all go out there for fun. It's just, you know, it's a beautiful place. Why not? And, you know, it was an interesting spot. And, you know, we were curious about it, you know, as is anyone, you know, if you found an unmarked, you know, cemetery or even grave for that matter, you would be interested and want to go there. That's
right.
Natural.
Sure.
But we had known about this for many years, and my grandmother, who grew up in the area, had been there multiple times over her lifetime. And so we went there, and we were kind of just, you know, we didn't go there to take pictures. We weren't going there to stir anything up. We just wanted to go see it. It's a beautiful place. So we get there, and I believe that I'm an empath. I am very sensitive to things, good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get there, and I had been there before, but I could just sense this dread or doom type feeling. I really can't explain it. It was like just this, the darkest presence taking over me. I still can't even explain it, put it into words. But
like a sense of oppression?
Yes, like everything that is good is gone. Like, just so sad, so sick physically. Just everything I love has died. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Just a sense of dread and just terrible, terrible feeling. I was physically ill. We didn't even get a mile away before I started feeling this. And I'm like, wow, okay. And at this point in my life, I didn't realize it was an empath. So I didn't quite know what was going on with me. So I just tried to shake it off, you know, turn the radio up, let's listen to a song I like, let's zone out. And it didn't help. I finally had to be like, okay, when we get there, I'm going to get out, but if I don't feel good, I'm going to have to go back to the car. I don't feel well. I just felt instantly just nauseous and just cold and sick and like hot, like cold sweats, you know, just shaking. It was so terrible. And so we get there and I tell my mom was in a separate car. I was in the car with my boyfriend at the time. And she was in a station wagon in front of us. We were in a little two-door truck. And actually, you know what? My real father happened to be with us as well. It's a really weird... It's funny. I just remember that. My real father was with us as well, with my brothers in the car. They were behind us. So anyway, we pull in. And when you pull in, the only way to pull out is to back out onto the road. So we pull in my dad first, then us in the truck, then my mom behind us. Well, we pull in and we get up. There's like a cattle gate that you know, it's right there on the road. It's right in this driveway of his home, though. So we pull in the driveway, and there's a cattle gate. We get to the cattle gate, and I step, you know, you have to climb through the gate, which isn't hard, but we climb through the gate, and I'm looking around for a second, and I'm still feeling really ill, but I just thought, like, I was going to pass out. I couldn't stand any longer. So I made my boyfriend's time walking back to the truck, and he's like, are you okay? Are you okay? I'm like, you know what? Just go, have fun. I just think, you know, my anemia is bothering me. Just go back. I'll be okay. So after a few minutes, this sense of get out now, like something tragic was going to happen,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, an asteroid was going to come to Earth and hit us. You know, something catastrophic was going to happen. I was so terrified. So I said, let's go. We have to leave. So I jumped out of the car, ran over there, and I'm like, please. I'm like screaming, acting like a crazy person. We have to leave. Please, I can't. Like, and so they took me seriously at that point, finally. And we all decided to leave. You know, they all just were like, whatever, she's having a fit, you know, we'll just go, she's scared. You know, and I hadn't, you know, expressed to them, you know, of course, in that moment, it's hard to express how serious you are about it. Later I did, and they believed me. But so we go to leave, and so now, where the cars are, my mother would have to back out onto the road first, and leave, and then we could back out. So my mother was looking, she's in a separate car than me still. I didn't know this at the time, but I saw the same thing. I'm the only one that saw the same thing. My mother was backing out, and as she's looking in her rear view mirror to back out, she sees what looks something like, I don't know, an innkeeper, some sort of, I really don't know how to explain what she saw. Like an innkeeper, someone who, you know, like if you had a mansion or something, they would be a butler type person.
Ah, okay.
Standing right behind her car, like on her bumper, pretty much. And he was clear as day. And he was pointing, like, the direction out. So, backwards. He was pointing backwards and just had the most terrifying look on his face. She said, I have never wanted to run someone over so much that I run this man over. She was, if it was a real man, he'd be dead. She just bolted. And at the moment, I don't know if I saw it with my eyes or my mind, but I saw the same thing. And I'm like, go. To my boyfriend's time, like, get out, leave. And we all peeled out of there and just drove. We should have been pulled over and got a ticket for reckless driving. We were all driving so quickly back home. It was a 20-mile drive back home. But we didn't stop for nothing. And it was broad daylight. Nothing would have stopped us. I promise you that. And so we get home. And I told my mom, because I started to feel better. And she goes, were you okay? You know, she came to check on me. Like, are you feeling better? Are you okay? Are you coming down with something? Checking my head for a fever? And I finally told her, I was like, Mom, I don't know why. I got really sick there. I really was scared. And she goes, whoa. She's like, so did I, but I had to be strong, like, for, you know, for everyone else. I didn't want to seem like a wussy. I'm like, okay, well, you're stronger than I. But I'm like, did you see that man? She goes, and then she just described everything that I saw.
Hmm.
In more detail. And I'm like, wow, you know, this isn't, no one else thought it. We're both kind of, especially the time in our life, aren't the type of person or people to be willing to admit these kind of things. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
You know, but that is the one paranormal experience that I've had that I can't explain away. There was clearly not a man standing there, or my mother would have killed him. And then we would have killed him driving over him, and so would have my father.
right. And I've felt that sense of oppression and fear, actually, in a local graveyard here. There's an area that gives you that feeling. It makes you just want to run.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it completely fascinating, because I wonder what the point is.
Yeah, you know, when I saw the man, even though he wasn't speaking, obviously, if his mouth was moving, not just because he was pointing, like, get out, I just felt he was pissed that we were, I'm sorry, he was very, very upset that we were there. And he was really, it was an overwhelming feeling of leave now or something bad will happen to you.
Right, right. All right.
You know, I really, there's no other way to put that one, but very strange. And, you know, I've been there since. And maybe just because I was terrified before, I haven't since I've been there since, I haven't got the overwhelming feeling of being sick like I did before.
Right.
But I definitely am too scared to get out of the vehicle at this point. I'd be willing to go back there. It's been many years since I've even traveled there, but I would be willing to go back just to try it.
Also, the place here doesn't always feel that way, and I think this energy may have cycles to it where it's stronger and weaker depending on what's going on. And I also wonder if it's like Earth-related as opposed to entity-related. Like maybe something can come through at certain points during, you know, say a stronger solar cycle or something, or some kind of cosmic connection somewhere that allows this energy to be stronger in certain areas and allows things to come through. And the oppression may not be coming from the entity necessarily. I mean, it could be, but it could also be just a general vibration of the area that happens here and there.
Wow. You know, thank you for that. I never, ever thought of it that way, but that makes so much sense to me now.
I think anything you see, if you see an entity during that time period, it's going to be frightening because your senses are already in that heightened, scared sort of sense.
No, oh my gosh, absolutely. I'm going to have to mention that to my mother because she kind of had a hard time dealing with it as far as, you know, just trying to grasp in your own mind, why did I feel like that? Because we've been there so many times before. So, yeah, no. That's a really good way to, yeah.
I'm going
to have to think about that. Thanks for that.
All right. Well, we got to take a quick break. We'll be back in a minute or so with Summer.
The opinions expressed by the host and guests on Where Did the Road Go are their own and not necessarily those of WVBR or its management. Where Did the Road Go can be heard first and usually live on WVBR, Saturday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern. Go to wheredidtheroadgo.com to ask questions of our live guests through the chat room. Where Did the Road Go is then re-aired on Dark Matter Radio and Deprogrammed Radio. You can download all shows for free on the website, and you can subscribe to us on Stitcher, iTunes, YouTube, or Vimeo. Additional content can be found on our video channels. You will also find our upcoming schedule, book reviews, blogs, free book downloads, links, and more. We are also on Facebook and Twitter, and if you want to help support the show, there are links to donate to us. Everything you need can be found at wheredidtheroadgo.com.
And tonight we're talking with Summer Akasha Snape. I got that right, right?
Yep, that's exactly right.
All right. And for a website, you're just using your Facebook page at the moment.
Yeah, as of yet. Recently, I've had a little bit of an influx of followers, so hopefully soon I will have a website, and I'll have to let you know about that. Thank you so much.
Okay, and the link to your Facebook is on wheredidtheroadgo.com. So if you're listening to this live, it's right there on the front page. If you're listening in an archive, it's on the archive link. So one of the things you're getting into in this book too is Spring-Heeled Jack.
Yeah, Spring-Heeled Jack is another one of the more obscure cryptids with very, very few personal accounts. I mean, actually, you know what? There's quite a few personal accounts, but at a very short time period. They kind of fizzled out after years.
Right.
If you look it up, what it's listed under is hoax / mass hysteria / demon phantom. So it's kind of hard to put to really map this one out. The first account was actually 1837, and the last one that I know of is in 2012. But it
really?
Was mostly in, yeah. Oh, you know, it really, there was a lot of years where there was none. No accounts of it at all.
Yeah.
You know, 50, 70 years sometimes, there would be nothing. But the last one was in 2012, yeah. In the UK, London, Liverpool area. But in 1837, there, all of a sudden, around the time, you know, a lot of people like to associate it with Jack the Ripper.
Right.
There was accounts of really what seemed to be a man or a being whom leapt from rooftop to rooftop with unhuman bounds. I mean, leaps and bounds that were unhuman-like. Something like, I don't know, a Spider-Man would do or something without the web.
Right.
Just leaping from rooftop to rooftop and just haunting and terrifying unsuspected victims. And he, oddly enough, I just realized recently, just putting a lot of these cryptids up next to each other, looking at them right next to each other, somewhat like Green Man, he had a shiny metallic green, either jumpsuit type of getup, suspenders, or top coat, or trench coat type of feel.
Right, so a mix of some of the elements from the others.
Yeah, which I don't know if I should, I kind of group them together in my Phantom Attackers category. But I have to, as an investigator standpoint, I have to take that into account. Like, maybe you could potentially be similar cryptids or beings or people or what have you.
Right.
Phantoms. They also say this man had a maniacal laugh. He would, after speaking to you telepathically, like Clinian, would essentially vomit blue fire from his mouth.
Yeah.
Like I would think like a torch or a flame would. A blowtorch, maybe. Anyway, that's terrifying. His eyes were essentially reported as red balls of fire. His hands were elongated. His fingers were elongated with these shiny metallic, knives or knives for fingernails.
Mm.
He actually, some of the reports of attacks, actually they accounted like in the actual source as far as wounds to the body of these women who were still alive, not dead, was long scratch-like marks made from what seemed to be sharp objects, like a knife.
Right.
But not just one knife, four or five at a time.
What did he actually kill anybody or just harm them?
Nope, he would just harm them, maim them, haunt them, taunt them, scare the crap out of them.
Right. But he did actually inflict some injury with cuts and such.
Yeah, he did. Like I said, there was, very few people did he leave any mark on. I believe physically two reports actually had physical wounds on them. The rest of them were just psychological.
Okay.
But and back then, 1837, how many people had cameras?
Right.
I wish they did. We'd be able to see wounds, but they unfortunately didn't. So, but he would scare people into, a psychotic state. Like, these people lost their mind. They were so terrified, and it was always women. Well, women that really reported it. The police would get calls from these women. There were a few men who were taunted by the beings, but never really reported like the women were. And basically, the man had a frightening appearance. Like I said, he was diabolical looking. He had clawed hands, eyes that resembled red balls of fire, beneath a black coat. A few accounts said he wore a helmet and a tight-fitting white garment, like an oilskin.
Hmm.
I don't know if you know oil skin. That's a very odd thing.
Yeah. I think the whole thing is odd.
Right? Even then, who the heck wore that? I guess it's an odd thing for someone to report. Multiple people at that. He had a devil-like aspect of him. He just was really. The others said he was tall and thin, like the appearance of a gentleman. several reports mentioned he could breathe out blue and white flames, and that he wore sharp metallic claws at his fingertips, is the exact report, which is strange. Multiple reports on different, people that could not have known one another.
And I would think if we were getting a ton of these reports today, I would say, well, maybe someone has created some kind of suit or something where they can do some of these intense leaps and such. But back in it was the 1800s, wasn't it?
Yeah, 1837.
Yeah, I don't think, unless there was some genius out there creating technology that would allow them to do some of this stuff, I don't think that we have a simple, it was a person in a suit type of explanation for it.
No, totally. But even now, it would break the ankles of any amazing stunt artist or suit that you could even, conceive to build,
Right.
Whom can walk up the sides of walls?
Right, right.
And leap from house to house? No, you're so right. It's so unbelievable even now that it makes it even that more obscure to me. You know what I mean?
Yep.
No one can do that or has heard of that.
Well,
I try to group some of these things when I'm doing research. I try to go, I'm more a scientific minded person. So when I think of things like Bigfoot or the Abbey Light, I try and think of what scientifically it could be, but there's really nothing with these beings that I put in the phantom attackers category. What could they be? I don't know.
All right.
In all the research I've done, and most people, like you said, David Weatherly, he named one of the many amazing authors and researchers. I don't know, and I really don't think at this point they can either.
No, and I don't think so. But I also wonder if what we're seeing is not what's really there. That it's taking a different. It's like a different phenomena taking on different forms.
Something that could, a shapeshift type of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Or it may form itself based on our beliefs, so once one person sees something, other people start seeing the same thing. Not that they're making it up, but that it's choosing
that
form.
That's exactly what mass hysteria is, I believe. Mass hysteria, that's what this is filed under, actually, is mass hysteria one of the categories. No, it's like, Mothman. People think it's a mass hysteria moment where one person reports it, everyone hears it. So when you see something even remotely, has one of the aspects, you kind of, in your brain, kind of files it under that too.
Right.
So you start to hear, see, feel things that maybe they're exaggerated. I don't know.
Exactly. And we're at the mercy of our senses as well. So if we see something we can't really fit into a category, into something that we already know, we sort of, our brain sort of puts traits on it to make it understandable to us.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like I said, in other interviews, I've seen an owl fly over the hood of my car, and legitimately was like, holy crap, I just saw a flying person that looks like a mouse. You know what I mean?
Really?
But I don't see many owls, nor do I see many Mothmen, but, my brain likes to go to that crazy place. That's just what happens, because you hear about it, it's creepy, and you're creeped out, so you kind of tend to lean toward that.
Sure, absolutely. Now, you've done some research on black-eyed children as well.
No, I have. Actually, David Weatherly wrote a book on black-eyed kids, black-eyed beings. There's a good number of accounts still. It began in the 1990s, in the 90s sometime. I believe in the mid-90s, around 96. So I was one. I'm sorry, I was 11 in 96. And so I was a little too young to know that. But I have researched it extensively, I'd like to think. Some of the accounts are so strange that you kind of want to lean more toward the mass hysteria. But there are a few accounts that you just can't discredit or discount. And one of them is a man who was home alone, completely normal, as normal as normal you can imagine, I think. you know, an upstanding citizen. He had a little dog, a puppy at the time, and it was barking upstairs. And then he heard, he was in his bedroom, or he had a two-story home. He heard a little, a patter at the door. So he came to the door, and his dog was just freaking out. And he had, a, you know, the windows right beside your door, the long door windows.
Yeah.
Top to bottom. And he looked out, and he saw two children standing there. It was around daylight, late afternoon. And so he looks out the window, and he sees his kids, you know, kind of scrubby looking. Just, you know, he didn't think anything of it other than there's two kids at my door. I'm going to open the door. So he opens the door with a little bit of caution. He opens it, and these kids didn't immediately think much of it. And the kids ask him, can we come in? We're lost. We need to use your phone. And so he, again, doesn't think much of it. These are two children, one being a girl, one little boy. And so he lets them in. And, you know, as soon as he lets them in, he feels this, before they even have a chance to say anything, feels this, like I said, the feeling I have previously at the encounter I had at the graveyard, just an just immense amount of fear, just uncontrollable, just sense of tragedy.
Right.
There's really no way to explain what he felt. He was just terrified. And so he just wants to do whatever they say so he can get them out, you know?
Right.
Oh, my God, why did I let them in my house? And which is really odd to him. You know, he's trying to logically say, when you're two kids, what could they possibly do, you know? I mean, they couldn't overpower him. Even if they had a weapon, he'd probably overpower him, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And so he finally, the kid asks, can I use your phone? And so he points the kid in the direction of the phone, which is downstairs from the phone. He points him in the direction of the phone. Can we call our parents? Or we need to use the phone. So he does. The other kid asks, I need to use the bathroom. And before he can answer, he looks towards the direction where the other kid was walking and sees the kid at the phone and goes to turn back to the other child, I mean, in a split second, and tell him where the bathroom was. And the kid's already upstairs on the way to the bathroom. Which kid didn't know. How did this kid know where his bathroom was? I mean, who would look upstairs for a restroom?
Right.
Excuse your house. I would have really went down the hallway with someone. So he found that odd, but still terrified. So he kind of, you know, back into his bedroom slowly and kind of is listening for a second. And here's the kid, you know, just saying, and he doesn't really know what, into what he thought was the phone. And kind of loses a little bit of time in his head, doesn't really know how long it has been. Finally, he walks back out, and the one kid's coming downstairs, and he is asking him questions that really have nothing to do with being lost, right? You know, who are you, this and that. And the guy gets terrified. At one point, feels threatened. One of the kids, he never really, because they kind of kept their head down, kind of robotic way of speaking about them.
Uh-huh.
Like a course, or like a, you know, something that was, you know, it's like a coarse way of speaking, mm-hmm. like a robotic way of speaking. And so that scares him even more. And at this point, his dog is cowered behind him, isn't barking anymore, and he feels that he needs to turn around and run in his room and lock himself in his room. Well, this kid, right before he does so, one of the kids looks up at him and has the whole part of the eye, both eyes, are completely black. The whole thing. There's no white in his eye, no nothing. They're black holes, essentially. And it scares the holy living, you know what, out of this guy.
Right.
So he turns around and books the juju and walks himself in. And what really ended up essentially happening is the man passed out from fear, I would think, from what he believed, and wakes up later to these kids being gone, and doesn't, you know, see the kids again.
Hmm.
But, you know, there's numerous accounts of this type of thing happening.
And it almost sounds like an urban legend when you hear about a couple of the cases.
So much. No, I totally agree. It does. But you kind of have to think some of these people are, you know, what I like to think is normal. Like I said, upstanding citizens who live have never had encounters with anything paranormal or otherworldly or even odd in their life.
And the fact that we know the people who have had these encounters also takes it out of the urban legend category. You know, if it was, well, someone told me that this happened, that's one thing. But, you know, like David Weatherly has gone around and interviewed so many of these people who had these encounters, so they're not anonymous friend of friends.
No, actually, that man, David Weatherly, knows quite well. And it's spoken to him on numerous counts. The same man I just spoke of. So, you know, like you said, yeah. How can you discredit that? I mean, you have to keep that in the category of what the heck.
True.
What's really going on? This you can't say that you feel when, especially if you were taking this interview on, you know, this person telling you this, you really aren't thinking they're crazy. You're getting the overwhelming feeling that this person isn't being dishonest.
Right.
This is what they experience, whether we believe it or not, they do. You kind of have to take it for what it is, you know.
Yeah.
I wish I could explain away all these things and make these people not be afraid, or even just help them understand, hey, I want to understand just as much, and I have an experience. I pray that I never experience a BDA on that level. No, thank you. I mean, I have my opinions as to what maybe a BDA could be if I had to,
And what do you think they could be?
You know, honestly, I studied a lot of different religions, Catholicism being one of my favorites because it's so strange, some of the beliefs they have.
Mm-hmm.
But what I would think is maybe some sort of demonic being taking the form or essentially the body of a child because it's an easy prey, maybe. Thus having, you know, no soul. The eyes are the window to the soul to me. When you look into someone's eyes, you feel like you can connect with them.
Okay.
Them having no eyes to look into to connect to makes me believe that their soul is no longer with their body.
Okay.
So I think that it's some sort of maybe a demonic being sent here to have, you know, with one purpose, and that is to be let in. But why, I don't know. But that's as closely as I can relate it to anything I've ever heard of or studied about, or, you know, whether I believe demons are real or not have nothing to do with it. That's just as close as I could really put it in any category. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And I think the needing to be let in, you see in some mythology of vampires and things like that as well. So there may be a connection there somewhere along the line.
No, definitely. A lot of people say they're vampires, or, you know, maybe it's a demon vampire from hell. I really don't know. I highly doubt they're going to come in and suck your blood, but if they do, we told you so. I don't, you know what I mean? I don't know. I really don't know. But it's like I said, as much research as I've done, that's as closely as I can put it in my mind.
All right. Well, we're almost out of time. Again, people can find you on Facebook.
Correct. And anyone can feel free to message me or add me at any time. I'm more than happy to have you guys. I appreciate everybody who is supportive. I really do.
And
so, soon, hopefully,
I
will have a website.
And you're also a co-host of another radio show.
Yeah, I just recently started co-hosting a radio show you can find on YouTube. We do a show every Sunday. It's called The Bigfoot Revolution. My co-hosts are Matt Knapp and Phil Poling, who has a show, who's actually a really popular YouTube channel called Terror Breakdown. It's an amazing channel. I don't know if you checked it out. You should check it out. It's really eye-opening. It's a fun channel. But the show is really fun. Actually, tomorrow we're doing a show about man-made cryptids. So that should be pretty fun.
Oh, all right. And the book, do you have an estimation of when you might have it out? End of the year, maybe?
Yeah, end of the year, definitely before 2015, no matter what. It'll be out I'm hoping for Thanksgiving.
Awesome. All right, well, thank you for spending some time with us. And we're going to end appropriately with some Psyche Corporation and Nightmares.
Nice. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
Shut the closet door. It's under the floor. The monster's there. The day I was born, you promised me hellfire. You were so sure I grew up waiting for demons to find me. I grew up hungry for ghosts to define me. Give me the nightmares, cause death doesn't scare me. I want the vampires and I want the glory. Side of your suffering, bitterness, suffering, offering doom, 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 doom. Sick of waiting for your curses to catch up to me. Burn me, chill me, slake me, thrill me. I don't want the unicorn, I want the bloodsucker. Modify the uniform, cause I'm a monster. Offering doom, 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 doom. Sick of waiting for your curses to catch up to me. Burn me, chill me, slake me, thrill me. This is a sound I've heard before. It's like a voice asking for more. Ma chère éclate à cause des ailes. En grand spectacle de primavera. Doesn't scare me. I want the vampires and I want the glory. Now ammunition, give me an Armageddon. Give me the daring to forfeit ordinary dreams for the cost of pleasing humans far too steep. Give me the nightmares, cause death doesn't scare me.
You're tuned to WBBR FM Ithaca.